Kindling and Memory by Left Side Down. Are we expecting anyone else? Asks Andromeda, pacing back and forth by the windowsill on which the polished menorah rests, candles in hand. Shall I begin? I might have invited a few... You know what, Mum? Take a seat. The sun hasn't even set yet, Tonks points out. It has no effect. Andromeda continues pacing, as if she hasn't even heard them. Throwing up their hands, Tonks collapses on the couch beside Fleur. Holy Helga, my mother! Though Fleur only knows fragments of Andromeda's life story, a very extraordinary one from the bits she's been able to put together, she wonders if she might have the tiniest idea of what Andromeda must be feeling. Fleur hasn't been cut off from her family, but she does know what it feels like to be a stranger in a strange land with only one lifeline to hang on to. She doesn't know what it would feel like to have that suddenly, violently, taken from her. She hopes she never has to find out, which is why she wraps one arm around Tonks, gives them a squeeze, and plants a kiss on their bright blue hair. But she can imagine it well enough, which is why she pushes herself to her feet and makes her way over to Andromeda. There is plenty she wonders that Tonks is reluctant to talk about, and she doesn't want to be insensitive, but she does want to start somewhere. And she has a good feeling about this, tonight of all nights. Did you convert? She begins with the little she's been able to gather from Tonks. Her clumsiness is due more to her unfamiliarity with the topic than any struggle with English. But all the same, the words are hard to find. I did, yes. Fleur resists the urge to fidget, to squirm, to play with her hair. She recognizes Andromeda's gracious smile, smoothing over Fleur's unusual awkwardness, and resolves all the more to learn. Thankfully, her mother-in-law is happy to keep talking. Ted never pressured me to convert, she says, a strange note in her voice, as if she already knows what they're going to name the baby Fleur is carrying. It was my choice. If anything, he insisted I didn't need to. We wouldn't have been able to marry regardless. But I wanted it. She gazes out the window. Though tears fill her eyes, they are very politely refusing to fall. His synagogue. They were the ones who took me in. Gave me all I had been missing. So I wanted to convert. For us, yes. But also for me. Fleur looks from the unlit menorah to their house, tastefully decorated in blue and white, and back to Andromeda. She's more than happy to encourage, with an affirming hum, a nod. She wants to hear these stories, and clearly they want to be told. And so she's engrossed in listening to a story about the miracle of abundant oil, of hope and strength that never runs out, against all odds, defying all explanation, when there's a knock at the front door. Tonks scrambles for it, and although they trip over the rug, they're still faster to the door than Fleur is. She's never clumsy, not even now. She chooses to be careful and slow, rather than hasty. Andromeda inclines her head and gives her a half-smile, of appreciation, of sympathy. Fleur recognizes the two faces at the door, Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, Gryffindors from Harry's year. They're not the most active in all the post-war politicking, but she's seen them around enough to know who they are. Seamus is Jewish, Tonks is saying to her mother. And Dean is...
His partner, Dean supplies, dark eyes deep set and solemn. Chag Sameach.
Fleur knows, they all do, that Dean had spent months on the run with Ted, that he was the last one of them to see Ted alive. Is it entirely coincidence that he's here? Or was it Tonks's intention for their paths to cross, now that their grief is no longer a fresh, gaping wound, red and raw, but beginning to scab over? In the months that have passed, It's now something they've all managed to find ways to live with.
Fleur could lose herself in ruminations about how their grief has taken on new dimensions with the holiday season, with the shortening of days and the lengthening of nights, with their baby, who'll be here with the new year. But between taking their guests' coats and receiving their gifts, Tonks is rapidly running out of hands, so Fleur takes the dangerously teetering bottle of wine from them and leads their guests into the house. As they walk past the kitchen, Seamus's soft exclamation of, "Smells so good," draws a pleased smile from Andromeda, the biggest Fleur thinks she's seen all evening. Her thoughts linger on that as they extinguish the lights in the house and gather at the window, looking out at the snow-covered, indigo-cast street, with the warm comfort of dinner and home and love at their backs. Andromeda strikes a match to light the shamash.
"The helper candle," Tonks explains,
and waits until the flame steadies in the wick. Fleur's gaze drifts from the candle to Tonks, who's joining in to recite the blessings, speaking the words with a smooth fluency that should probably not have surprised Fleur. At a nod from their mother, Tonks picks up the shamash in both hands to light the lone candle standing tall on the far right side of the menorah. Murmurs of "Happy Hanukkah" are exchanged all around, and Fleur squeezes Tonks's hand. Her surprise must be showing on her face, she realizes, because Tonks returns the squeeze with an almost bashful whisper.
"There's some things you don't forget, I suppose."
"Non," reassures Fleur.
"C'est magnifique. You always are."
She leans down to plant a quick peck on Tonks's brow, right above their eyebrow ring. 7 more nights, she thinks. She wonders if she'll get used to this. As their party moves in the direction of dinner, her attention turns to their guests. They're teenagers still, but they're also men now, by both the laws of British wizarding society and the trials of life. They don't look at her with gaping maws and googly eyes anymore. Those are reserved only for each other. It warms her heart to see them sneak glances and brush fingers in between setting the table, carrying out the brisket, and draining the latkes that Andromeda's frying. As they all tuck into the savory potato pancakes, perfectly crisp and complemented with fruity applesauce, their smiles are as steady and bright as the flames burning by the window. Pleasantries are exchanged over dinner. Only the basics at first, about Dean's work as an artist and Seamus's with magical creatures. But gradually, over the course of the evening, Andromeda softens too, aided by Tonks's best charisma and charm, and by a light fruity wine that Fleur looks enviously upon. Still, as they move on to dessert, the soufganiot are perfectly pillowy, the filling sugary sweet, and she doesn't miss it, not really. Well, maybe she does, just a little. She thinks she accidentally talks Seamus's ear off about Chardonnay, though, perhaps just a bit too much, because Tonks, Andromeda, and Dean are laughing about something completely unrelated by the time she finishes her spiel. Setting the cork and bottle back down, she scrambles for a change of topic.
"Shall we put on some music? Andromeda has a lovely collection," she suggests,
recalling something she's heard through the grapevine, from Parvati, or perhaps a Weasley, about Seamus's passion for the Hogwarts choir. True enough, when they've settled on the couch and the record player's weaving its magic in the background, he's eager to talk about the pieces he's singing at synagogue. From there, it's not long before this draws Dean's attention, before he's talking about fishing with Ted, Dirk, Cresswell, and the goblins, relating in turn the evenings he spent hearing them tell tales by a fire. Fleur doesn't quite get why an anecdote of Ted tossing crumbs of bread into a stream of water one morning makes Andromeda tear up. She makes a mental note to ask Tonks what Tashlich means later. It's not until after they leave that Andromeda unrolls a piece of parchment.
"Dean, he gave me this," she says half-wondrously, holding it out to them.
Tonks reaches for it, secure in Fleur's steadying grip of their shoulders. Sure enough, it's a face Fleur knows well. She recognizes the shape of his eyes, his jaw, his smile.
Not from the memorial plaque at the ministry she's visited only once, nor from the photos around the house. The only one she's seen is the single print Tonks keeps in their wallet, and even then, only briefly. No, she knows those features from the face she sees beside her when she wakes up every morning. The one that's lowered, head bowed, cheeks wet with silent tears. Tonks and Andromeda stare at it, unmoving, for the longest time. And Fleur knows they're seeing much more than gray pencil lines on paper. They leave it on the windowsill beside the now dark menorah, a safe distance away from the trails of rapidly cooling wax that is all that remains of the lights.